Accession number 16663, reel 2.
This is Kimura, reel 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were describing the work that you had to do.
Yeah. That was only for the, when the embankment had to be made further on. That was, what else about this kind of the work? Yes, you had to, this part of Russia, as they joke, have only 9 months of winter and long 3 months of summer. But thanks to it, quite often, when we dug, there was a minus several degrees of
frost
during the night time. So coming back, we were supplied with the thing to break the ice, few inches, quite often thick, and then start to dig. If there was a water, clay and water, and the mud was nice and like a thick dough, nobody was bothered about. We had to go there and stood in this water, almost at the freezing point, and dig the thing. That's how the railway was built. But the peculiarities of the Russian life at the time, the man who was really technically in charge of that work was obliged to do all the calculations of our job, because of course we were paid for every single cubic feet of earth, every single dug out or cut down tree, and so on. And by the time in this camp, altogether there were 1,500 and something of us, including old people, children. Working force, I believe, was about 900, but of course I don't remember precisely. The rest were at home because, you know, either being babies or old people, very old people. Or like my sister, she was 13, she was 14. Normally she would be sent to work, but she suffered polio at the age of 5. And her left arm was paralyzed, so they excluded her. She was not sent to work. Actually, in our family, it was only I who was forced to work, because my mother somehow managed to squeeze herself out, temporarily, that is. Anyway, this man, Presidastil, I think that was the official position, the name of his position, was obliged to do all this calculation for 800 people. He had one deputy, and that was all. Soon enough, he noticed that we, that is a group of 10, all the workforce. I'm sorry that I am so messy, and I am always, you know, sort of forgetting to give proper background to the things. All the workforce was organized in the groups from 10 to 15, 16 people. And the work was done by the group, so-called brigade, brigada. And the work was done, and the calculation was done for this brigada, not individually for the person. And we managed, girls from schools like myself, managed at the moment when we noticed what is going on, when we were organized to this brigade, we managed to stay together, and we managed to be in one brigade, all of the same, let's say, background girls. And this Presidential obviously thought that we could do some calculation, help him. So he mentioned once or twice, work usually lasted during the lovely 3 months of summer, not less than 12 hours per day. At the end of the winter and beginning, we still would work some few hours as long as the light will permit us. But nevertheless, after all these 12 hours, let's say, or 10 hours, whatever was possible, after coming back from work, we would go to his office and help him. He could not pay us for that officially. But what he did, and that is absolutely the way Russian really worked and lived there, apparently our, at first he was careful where we were sent to, let's say, dig the trenches. Clay was left to somebody else. Sound, which is much, much easier, was given to us. And miraculously, our each cubic meter sort of multiplied itself in his measurements. So when we dug, let's say, 50 cubic meters of sand, officially it was 100 cubic meter of clay. Clay had a much higher price than sand. Our each, which we had to cut down and dig out the roots, each pine tree, not pine, I beg your pardon, it isn't, it was, that was the Arctic sort of Christmas tree. What is the botanic name? Fir tree, like a Christmas tree. I don't know what is the name really. That tree spreads almost on the surface, its roots, and is soft. So taking out roots is an easy job. Birch tree has roots going very much deep down and very hard roots. So it is a hard job. So all our fern trees become birch tree in his calculation, and when they were 6 inches, let's say, wide in diameter, they become 12 inches in diameter. That is that is another. So, and when the work, you know, the ground work had to be stopped because of the frost, was, you know, coming to minus 30 centigrade, minus 40 centigrade, and a little bit more. Officially, we shouldn't work, even us, although we really were, without any rights. But nevertheless, with all the paradoxes in their system, there were some rights. And we shouldn't be forced to go out to work when it was minus 40. One of us, I mean deportees, had a spirit thermometer, because the normal one, of course, wouldn't work in such a cold temperature. So our NKVD, who guarded us, quickly broke that one, which could tell us that we are entitled to stay at barracks. So later on we didn't have, but anyway, when that happened, the people in general went to chop down the woods. Yeah. I lost my thought. And that was, and they were obliged to cut it into 1 yard pieces and put it into tidily, you know, in sort of one space, next to already the same thing done by previous occupant of our camp. Apparently there were some Tatars who died in majority before us in this place. So they have done it. The wood they chopped down was already totally rotten, but nevertheless, next to their efforts were added ours. You know, people were obliged to go and cut down this wood to do lumbering job. All these people who built the railway during the summertime. But being in favorite position, we were left, we, this group of us, were left as a brigade who took care to keep in working order that few miles of the railway line already erected. So we were going with huge bars of iron, checking if the railway line was level, if the one side was not lower than the other, if that things was really firmly nailed down. It wasn't like it is here in Great Britain. There were huge nails which you had to hammer into the wooden planks and make sure that it is on the level and all this kind of thing. So we were this kind of brigade. And that was a very lucrative job because it is difficult, impossible to check how many places needed repair. So it was really very privileged kind of job. So that was the first winter I have spent doing this job. In the meantime, we have had, you know, the things we took from Poland, some clothing with us, which were of the unbelievable value to local Russians. Anything manufactured was extremely valuable to the local people. Yes, kolkhoz, the nearest kolkhoz was some, I believe, 8 miles from our camp, and further and further and further, you know. But nevertheless, there were 1 or 2 days in months when NKVD allowed Russian people to come, and there was kind of little market. We come out with our clothing, whatever we had to spare, and exchange it for few potatoes, few carrots, if you were very lucky, onion. If you were extremely lucky and you had something as valuable like leather long shoes, that was beyond the imagination world. Then you even could get a tiny piece of pork, because each family could raise a pig in the kolkhoz, in a kolkhoz, any kolkhoz, and could kill it and would get, I think, I don't remember precisely, fair proportion of that meat for their own use. The rest they were obliged, including skin, which was always used to produce leather by government. So they occasionally had a little bit of meat. I mean, in kolkhozes, not us. So you, having something really valuable, you could even get a small piece of this meat. But after 1 year, not much was left. In our particular case, practically not a thing was left.
Why did you have to barter directly instead of using rubles?
They wouldn't take rubles. What value were rubles? Rubles, gold, was of no value at all. Manufactured goods, food, those were the values. Money? They scarcely ever got anything in their shops. And that was practically the only way they could spend rubles. The only and none other. So rubles were not coming into the consideration at all. Rubles didn't give you a thing. That's how it was.
So money was not valued?
No. Money were only the only value of money was when we were supplied in those camps daily. And that was really regularly, without almost exception. Almost without exception. Less than a pound, that will be much more understandable. Of bread for each working person, and half a pound, less than half a pound of bread for each not working person. So in our case, I was the only one working, and three at the beginning. At least later on, they managed to force my mother as well to go to work. So we were getting about 2 pounds of bread daily. And for that you had to pay rubles. 18 months, that was all the time we were there, in this camp, particular camp. During this time, about 4 times, they brought things like barley, let's say. And everybody could get half a pound of barley. They brought once sugar, and everybody could buy a half a pound of sugar. They brought some flour, some very crude macaroni, and it was always pound, half a pound per head you could get. And for those things you had to pay rubles too. But local people thought that we are being spoiled because they never had such rich supplies in their kolkhoz shop. Once, when we were not wise enough, they delivered a tiny little fish, salted, really very tiny. They only delivered to this our shop because it was getting all rotten, it was getting spoiled. For us as well, rubles were of no particular value by that time, I mean, we bought this and we never knew what a treasure we bought. Apparently it was the greatest delicatessen thing for the weddings. And never mind it that it was slightly off. That didn't bother local people. So learning that, we kept. You know, second time they again brought us a little bit of this fish. Very carefully we kept all this fish and we bought all the fish we could because that was a very nice exchange for carrot and so on, or potatoes or so on. So the value of things can change tremendously as well. And we could not imagine that people could eat this off fish. It smelled horrible. It was obviously getting rotten, but nevertheless it was of the greatest value to the local people. Anyway, where I am now, because I lost all the...
Well, you were talking about the living conditions in this camp.
Mm-hmm.
What were you hoping for? Did you have anything to hope for?
At that moment, no. At that moment, no. We were outspoken, I think for the very first time, and Kavuda, that is political policy, that was a political policy. For the very first time they came across people so outspoken as we were. But we felt that we lost everything. In 18 months of our stay in this camp, out of this 1,500 and something people, 800 were on the cemetery.
On the?
Dead on the cemetery. More than 50%. There was typhoid, but Above all, there was exhaustion, there was horrific starvation, and being forced to work.
Were you all Poles in this camp?
Well, as I was saying previously, we were basically all, let's say, from Poland. Some of them might, but at the time, feel that they were Ukrainian, they, you know, the forestry workers. But that was like that. So we suffered by that time all kinds of malnutrition signs. A lot of ulceration, especially on your legs, but let's say on each leg 40, 50 little small ulcers. With all that, you had to go into that wet clay. That didn't bother anybody. A lot of people lost teeth. There was night blindness. As soon as the light went off, people were totally blind. And of course, we were skeletons. Skeletons. By that time. And why did we, my family, survive? That was kind of a miracle, if you believe in miracle, but you can call it whatever. My school friend from Sarny, from my town, somehow they learned the address of our camp. How, I don't know. And her mother sent us two parcels. She sent us more, but the rest of it never reached us. Because I met my friend after the war. The first two, in confusion, somehow managed to reach us. That was the very first one which came to this camp, and somehow, you know, I suppose there were no strict instructions, and they delivered. And those were dried vegetables, melted in bottles, lard and butter, some like barley, things like that. So those two puzzles were really puzzles of life, sheer life. And that kept us through the, let's say, January, February, March. Kept us alive. Without it, we all four of us would be dead as well. When there were a few more working people, and the ratio of bread was higher, you could make a soup out of the bread. If you were lucky enough to take with you more of clothing, and especially if you were lucky enough, you had few men in your family and every single one had a good leather boots, your supplies, you know, your buttered supplies from, you know, kept you alive a little bit longer. So there were better off and worse off families. In our case, there was no men, there were no leather boots whatsoever, so we were rather the rest well. And at the end of this winter, somewhere in April, I believe, I was dochodiaga. Dochodiaga, it is, I believe, peculiarly Russian terms, and no other names have a verb like that. That means a person who is slowly coming to the very end, to death, through starvation and exhaustion. This death might take few days or few weeks, but the signs, the symptoms of it are pretty obvious, and the Russian know it. Every Russian at least knew it at the time, how it looks. It was so common condition that everybody knew how dohodiaga looks. And this председател, the one who sort of fixed that better for the winter time, said to me, "Girl, you know you are dohodiaga." And, you know, of course I knew. And he said, "It is pity. You shouldn't die. You have nothing to do with us. Whatever we have done, we done it." I said, "Why you are telling me this? I feel sorry." That was the man with wife and two children. I have to mention it. Because what he has done next, endangered. Not only him, but his wife and his children. And he said, NKVD, political police, never told me that you are not entitled for holidays and you are working over 1 year. So I will pretend that I don't know that you are not entitled, but go out of the barracks to work, because, as you know, NKVD will check you and guide you to the works. They always looked, you know, very carefully, guarded us with guns and things. But as soon as you are at the woods, you know, those days, and that is a very peculiar of the climate, Siberian, really, it was still European. East, not European, but climate was Siberian-like. That although in the during the night time it might be as much as 7, 8, or even 10 minus centigrade, in the middle of the day, in secluded clearings in the wood, might be plus 30, which is 90 Fahrenheit for a short while. Very short while, but it might reach. So it is very strange. Still, let's say 10, 30, 60 feet away, there is snow in the woods lying 6 feet deep, and you have vegetation rapidly coming up in this clearing. And vegetation, because there is really only 3 months of any possible time for vegetation to grow, it seems to be growing rapidly. So he said, "By this time you know what is edible in the woods. Go to the clearing, sit there and eat, and tell your mother to find something, to butter something. Try to help, because it is pity you have died." As it does not look that I am making, you know, some special favor for you, there is another girl in similar, like you, circumstances, so I will grant you to this holiday. For 10 days, somehow, it wasn't discovered.